Good morning, afternoon or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. My name is Matt Hudson from What I Watched Tonight, and joining me from across the pond, as ever, he's my hero in a half shell. It's John Burke from BurkeReviews.com. How are you, sir?
I am doing very well, Matt. Ready to go into the sewers and find some pizza, because that's where the good pizza is.
Sewer pizza, which is being custodied over by a rat, is exactly my kind of evening spent, JB. So let's do that. Looking forward to tonight's discussion. It's a chance for us and probably quite a lot of our listeners to almost feels like we're going back in time a little bit like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 did. Like we're going back in time a little bit to our childhoods, and also for the demographic of it, maybe it's your first introduction to said film we're talking about tonight. But before we talk about any films, Jonathan Burke, three things. Firstly, how are you? Are you keeping Florida safe and warm? And thirdly, happy birthday for the other day.
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate the birthday wishes. I'm doing okay. I am overtired and having too much anxiety where sleeping feels impossible. Like I woke up at 3:30 and was basically in and out of sleep till 5 when I woke up on purpose. But I'm a little drained. You know, it's that beginning of the year anxiety. Like I have too much to do and not enough time to get it all done. And to be honest, I'm a little burnt out in general. So like doing anything has been a struggle. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to do things and then I'm just like, I just can't. Decisions feel too hard and I'm tired. And so not enough's getting done, which is only increasing the anxiety. It's a vicious, vicious cycle, but I'm working on it. So hopefully everything will balance back out and it'll be okay. But how about you? Are you doing okay over there?
I am. I haven't had cake or any kind of sweet treats. Who am I kidding? I've had too many, actually. What am I talking? I know I had some today. I haven't had it for a specific reason other than I'm just gluttonous. But yeah, no, all good over here, my friend. Looking forward to tonight's discussion. Can't really say too much about what's happening over here because it's been a pretty quiet weekend, to be fair. Non-eventful, just how I like it. Nice and easy, nice and chill. Good start to the week, as much as it can do when you go to work, but nothing really to write home about or to be too concerned about, other than obviously what we're talking about tonight. Because I remember when this was announced, and I know John's seen the film, but the paranoia that ran through me thinking, I really hope I like this film because it really took me back to my childhood. I really hope JB likes this film because it takes him back to his childhood. Because tonight we are talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. And if you're new to the show, firstly, hello. Secondly, we are going to be delivering a non-spoiler episode tonight. Our main discussions are always non-spoiler. It's just thoughts and opinions. And we'll drop spoiler thoughts in a much shorter episode in a few days' time. So if you haven't seen Mutant Mayhem, don't worry. We're not going to spoil anything for you. But we're going to tell you what we thought about the film. So with that said, non-spoilers, here we go. Let's go through the numbers. It's directed by Jeff Rowe and Kyla Spears. And it's written by Jeff Rowe, Evan Goldberg, and Seth Rogen. It's kind of been seen as the brainchild of Goldberg and Rogen throughout the marketing. And the cast is huge. So we'll just go for the core six. We've got Micah Abbey, Shaman Brown Jr., Nicholas Cantu, and Brady Noon. They are our turtles, and they are our actual teenage turtles as well, which I'm pleased to announce. Also in the cast, Ayo Adebiri as April O'Neil, and Jackie Chan as Master Splinter. What's the film about? The synopsis reads, "The film follows the Turtle Brothers as they work to earn the love of New York City whilst facing down an army of mutants." The Turtle Brothers. I quite like that. Now, I'm sure we'll mention shortly our relationship with the franchise and the existing films. But critically, the other films, and that's animated, the OG, the Bave produced ones, don't always do very well, certainly critically. But this one, my friend JB, on Rotten Tomatoes, it sits at 96% with the critics and 92% with the audience. That's huge. Even better, I'd argue, is on Metascore, this has a 74, which is 10, 14 points more than I would have expected. IMDb 7.6 out of 10, and Letterboxd has this at 3.8 out of 5. And it's only available in theatres. It will be on streaming in a few weeks, I'm sure. But don't worry about that. Go and support the film. If you can do, give it your hard-earned money and go check it out on the biggest screen you can do. So I say Turtles. When I was a kid, the toys and the cartoons and the films I'd watched the most were Ghostbusters, Transformers, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or the Hero Turtles, as they were called in the UK, because apparently Ninja promoted violence, so they had to change to Hero. Weird, oh. Wild. Thanks, Maggie Thatcher. But So I love the Turtles growing up. Though the original film, certainly those first two, and especially Secrets of the Ooze, which is the first film I ever saw at the cinema. Oh. I loved those films, JB. And the third one is what it is. It's not great. I don't particularly like that one.
Yeah.
But I used to love the cartoon. I used to have all the toys, so the blimp, the turtle van, the Turtle Brothers, April O'Neil, Bebop, Rocksteady, Shredder, Splinter, all of the gang, the Foot Clan, and everyone. So I love playing with that, and I'd go to my friend's house when we'd play the Turtles. I always wanted to be Mikey because he was the smallest, like me. So I've growing up really, really, really liked them. The Bay films, I wasn't a huge fan of them. I thought they got a bit icky, as is the Bay's, but the Bay way. And I just don't think they looked great. You know, they don't look like teenage turtles. They look like turtles who've had a very tough paper round and are in their mid-40s and are going through stuff in those films. They are not teenagers. You could argue in the OG, they don't really look or sound like teenagers. But the Bay ones, not as big a fan of, and it's nothing to do with Bay himself. I just don't think the films are great. The 2007 animated film isn't bad. And I don't mind some of the comics. I've got The Last Ronin over there. The Eastman and Laird re-team up after years apart. So I'm a fan of the Turtles based mainly on childhood nostalgia. I think the more recent output in terms of live action, at least, hasn't been particularly great. JB, you're of a similar age and generation to myself. What's your relationship with TMNT?
Pretty much exactly the same as you. The difference was my first theatrical experience, as we've talked about on the show, is Ghostbusters. Oh. And I was very young. I was only 2 years old when I saw Ghostbusters in the theater. But I'm pretty confident I saw both the Turtle movies in the theater. I definitely saw Turtles in Time in the theater. And it's like you, one, I barely remember that movie. And I think I only saw that movie in the theater. But I love the cartoon. I think I had the most action figures of Turtle stuff. Like, I think I had like accessories. I had the party wagon. I had the blimp because I remember it was never inflated. I don't remember if it popped or but I still had it like, you know, around. And I absolutely love the Turtles. I actually was always a Raphael fan. To be fair, I loved all the Turtles except kind of Leo because he's a little bit of a narc. But I loved Raph because he had a temper problem, and I had an anger management issue as a kid. I was always really angry and upset about stuff, and so I connected with Raph. I've always enjoyed the Turtles. I didn't watch a lot of the variations of the later cartoons. I watched the 80s cartoon, the original OG. I have watched some of the other cartoons, including the 07 film. And I gotta say, I like the first Michael Bay film. It's not perfect, but there was a lot in it that I enjoyed, and I liked the Turtles. I liked the design. A lot of people didn't. I don't think it's as good as the old design, and I don't think it's as good as the current new design. But I in general, have really enjoyed the films. I bought the special edition DVD of the Michael Bay produced one because it came with masks. And I was like, yes. Oh, I gotta have those. Like, I've always enjoyed the Turtles. I haven't done a lot of comic books. I am planning on reading The Last Ronin, and they're making a video game of that, and I'm all 100% going to play that. Uh-huh. It's going to be supposed to be like the Batman Arkham games, from my understanding. So the Spider-Man game. But either way, I'm 100% playing that. I loved last year, the Ninja Turtles Revenge of the Shredder old school style, like arcade side scroller came out.
Yes.
Played and beat that like day two. I think I was like so hooked onto it. I love the idea of them, and I was hyped for this film, and it well lived up to my expectations. But I guess you should start us off with that.
By the way, Turtles in Time, the side-scrolling arcade game back in the real day, that was it. I remember playing that so much.
I did buy, and I haven't really played it, but I bought the they did the, I forgot what it's called. It's the Cowabunga Collection, and it is all of the old games, including the Game Boy game and like the original Nintendo game, which I had. The original Nintendo game was impossible to beat, but I liked it as a kid. But I did get that collection for the Switch, but then I sold my Switch. So I'm planning on getting the collection for like PS5 or Xbox at some point once it goes on sale. But
okay, well, real talk, actually, I want that last running game. But real talk, film talk, let's do it. Well, that's what we think about the franchise. So we're bringing that in to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Mutant Mayhem, which is of course an animated film by Paramount Pictures. It's an animated film, but don't let that put you off, because one of the best films of the year is called Across the Spider-Verse, and it is animated in a kind of similar off-the-wall style to this. Let's get straight to it, JP. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle: Mutant Mayhem. I thought it was such a good fun. I thought it was such a fun film. I enjoyed it very, very much. I've seen it twice now. I've seen it solo. And if you're listening from The Guardian, there's nothing wrong with going to the cinema by yourself. Back off. And yeah. I've seen it. I saw it with my six-year-old as well. So I've seen it through my eyes, and also how does a kid react to it? And also, does it hold up second time round? And it did. It really did hold up second time round. I'll tell you something. For a film which is an hour, 40, 45 minutes, it does not half zip along. It really does. On my second viewing, when I was watching it, it got to a certain point and I thought, holy Christ, this is the beginning of the third act. It feels like I've only been in here for half an hour. And I mean that, swear to God. Like, it feels like I've been here for 30, 40 minutes and we're getting to the third act stuff. So it really thunders along. And the energy is matched very much so by the wild kind of concept art animation, which I think works so well. It's so kind of grimy, grungy, but also very stylish and easy on the eye. It really fits the aesthetic of the Turtles. It feels like the old comics mixed with the animation, mixed with all of the iterations we've seen, just in a kind of scrawly way. But the energy is more than matched by the voice acting, especially by our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles themselves. Micah Abbey is Donatello, Sham Brown Jr. is Mikey, Nicholas Cantu is Leonardo, and Brady Noon is Raphael. As we mentioned, they're all teenagers, ranging from like 15 to 19. And my God, does it make a difference? It really does. You can feel the authenticity with these guys' performances. I believe that they are recorded in the same room facing each other. So the banter they had was real. It was there. It wasn't kind of scripted, as one's listening through the other through the ears. They're looking at each other as they're doing it. And the things that they're saying, it is some of the references and moments in the script are for a contemporary audience, for a younger audience, but having these guys say it felt genuine, more so than maybe back in the day Corey Feldman saying something akin to no disrespect to Corey Feldman, but I really, really liked our casting. I think Ayo Adebiri as April is great as well. I really think she does a very, very good job, and I like the character of April here. I like her motivations and why she wants to, because as we know, April O'Neil was a journo, whereas here they switched up a little bit. She's still a journalist, but her motivations as to why and what kind of journo are slightly different, and I dug it. And our baddie is, it's not Shredder. Usually that would be our kind of key antagonist. It is Superfly, who is, he's a housefly. He's a mutant housefly who is a creation of Baxter Stockman. So anyone will remember him from the old cartoons. And Superfly is voiced by Ice Cube, who I think is so much fun. He is having an absolute blast. There's one moment which I guess I'm about to say for spoilers, that the two times I've heard him say this particular line, I was in tears laughing. It's just his line delivery. But those guys are great, and everybody else in the cast as well. Such, I don't know if we're going through them or not, but
incredible cast.
Should we mention anyone in there, or are we saving that?
Yeah, I think, like, I mean, Giancarlo Esposito is Baxter, you just mentioned.
You know, damn well, that's his voice, you can tell.
Seth Rogen, John Cena as Bebop and Rocksteady, respectively. Rose Byrne.
Leatherhead.
I don't know how, like, we need to get into all the characters. Paul Rudd, Post Malone, Hannibal Buress. I mean, just such a star-studded cast there. What I think is really great, not to interject here.
No.
I know that's not usually our protocol, but I did kind of say how much I enjoyed this movie too. It's not a remake just to remake or start over. Like, this is a modernization and reimagining of the original property, and it definitely pays homage to a lot of the old stuff, but it's doing its own thing. It changes some of the origins in ways that I think are logical and kind of make sense, and maybe address some things that don't age well about the original story. And where I think this movie deserves a lot of credit, and maybe Seth Rogen and Evan, Goldberg, is I think this is the most likable version of Leonardo in any of the Turtle iterations that I have seen, where he doesn't feel, he still feels like Leo, but he doesn't feel as like standoffish he's got the default. I think katanas are kind of the coolest weapon, but at the same time, nunchucks are just really cool. But nunchucks are cool for like the wrong reasons.
About the big stick?
I mean, the big stick is awesome, to be honest. I think Donnie's underselling how cool it is. But Darth Maul, for example, his are lightsabers, but nevertheless. I actually like all the weapons, but I've liked the turtles since I was like six. So like, it's hard to like not like any of them. Like, legit, dude, as a kid, when I was like 6 years old, they sold the mask that had the nose. Like, so you had like the green nose, and that's all it was. You had the green nose and the mask, and then it came with like their plastic weapons and a belt. And like, I would walk around our local mall with that on as Raphael, with the size in my belt and everything. And my mom was embarrassed, but I insisted I was a Ninja Turtle, and I'm walking around with this.
You've got to do it now, baby. You've got to do it in the age you are now. It's just been your birthday. You need to take your wife shopping, and you need to dress up as Raphael once more.
If that ever happens, I will surely take pictures, but don't hold your breath for too long.
Look, if I ever get on the plane to Florida, I'll dress up as Mikey. You can dress up as Raph, and we can be taken down together. But I agree with you, my friend, about that. It's the most likable version of Leo. And also, you know, considering Seth Rogen is involved, I think there is a preconception of what you're going to get with him. And in terms of the humor and the kind of maybe the crude language, but you don't get that here at all. Mm-mm. It's a very earnest film of anything. And I do think it is an earnest film, and it's not condescending. There are teens, you know, the turtles are teenagers, but it is, and there are good messages throughout, but it doesn't ever feel like it's kind of grabbing you by the neck and talking down to you because you're a teenager or kind of beating you around the head with them. It's a fun, earnest film of which we don't really get that many, certainly from an IP, and this is the seventh film theatrically anyway in this series. It's rare to get so far down the line and get something as good as this. And I mean we mentioned the animation, you know, the choreography, the animated choreography is very good. One scene in this which is one of my favorite scenes of the year, it's a fight scene, but and we're talking side scrolling.
Yeah
my man, you know it. This particular one, you've got the turtles are fighting, and you know it's cut in. It's showing them in different locations fighting, but it cuts so deliciously between each one, so seamlessly, and, like one long edit, isn't it? And it's brilliant.
Well, and cinephiles will recognize it. I can't imagine it's an accident, but it's paying homage to Old Boy.
Yeah, 100%.
The hallway fight sequence in Old Boy, which is not a movie any kid should ever see, but one that's about to be back in theaters here soon. I was watching, like, oh my god, is this Old Boy? And
yeah, but they do it so well, don't they?
Oh yeah, it's fantastic. I love that sequence. It is easily one of my favorite of the year too. And I really love the animation style here, not just the animation, but like the art style, because they wanted it to feel like a kid's notebook, was what I heard in an interview on Instagram or something. So like, there's like doodles and sketches kind of integrated into the art, and it just feels different. And it does feel like you don't get this movie without Spider-Verse, but I don't feel like this is just another Spider-Verse. I feel like it's 100%. Its own evolution of like, animated films can look different. They don't all have to have the Disney aesthetic or this kind of clean smoothness to them. And obviously there's tons of like cartoons that have done weird animation, but we didn't see it on the big screen as frequently as we are now. And Spider-Verse, I think, shattered the mold of what an animated film can be. And this movie is, I think, the best, it's not a knockoff, but the best inspiration from Spider-Verse that we've seen so far. And I love so much about this film, and it does I will say the only knock, and it's not a real knock, is that it is leaning towards its target audience, which is kids. Like this, there are elements of this that might feel a little more childish because, again, it clearly has, like, you can tell Rogan's a fan of the originals and everyone involved. I think you can tell that there's a love of the original stuff, and there's stuff here for us. But the overall, like, story is for the younger audience, and it should be, because that's why we love it, because it was our youth. And now this film feels like it's going to breathe new life into the franchise, and it's going to foster a whole new generation of fans. But also, I think people like us are still going to just latch on to this. Yeah. They've already greenlit a sequel, and I've heard that there's going to be a series, too. And I'm just like, if it's all good, then I'm all in. I couldn't have been happier with this. My editor of Burke Reviews, David, who's been on this podcast, he went with me to the critic screening, which he does for a lot of the critic screenings. He is as big of a Turtle fan as the two of us, if not maybe bigger. He still has all of the stuff. We could feel each other's excitement while watching this film. It was so invigorating and fun. And the two people to our left, one was Tuna, was to my direct left, and there was another film critic that I'm familiar with. I wasn't sure how they would feel. They are a lot younger, and I don't know if they had a turtle connection like we do, and if they would have been a different set of turtles than the ones we grew up with. Yes. And when it was over, I think Toon is listing this as his number two superhero movie of the year, because he, for whatever reason, doesn't like Spider-Verse. I don't know what is going on with that. It's one of those things, too, and I really hope more people hear about it and will go see this, because it is for everyone. I would say the story and the plot leans towards younger audience and up to high school, because the kids are high school. And if you're a fan of like the John Hughes films, that is integrated into this because it is a high school film, but in its own way, it's like, it's not following those tropes exactly, but it's embedded into who the characters are because they know the world through watching. Like that's part of this whole story in this movie, is that they have not experienced what it is to be in New York. They're in New York, but they haven't been in New York the same way. And I just think it captures that in such fun ways. What to give credit to Slash Film, the Slash Film Cast. The Film Cast is no longer the Slash. They pointed out too that this is like, this one feels the most like a team that the characters have been introduced. Like the four of them are a unit. Like you really get that family unit strong here. They're not at each other, because that's like the one thing that killed me with the first movie. As much as I love that first movie, Raphael is sidelined for like three quarters of it. You know, he's in a bathtub. And
Donnie as well. Donnie doesn't really get much in the first film.
Yeah, they're all there, but it's more of like a Leo and Raph relationship movie, but that's heavy on Leo's side, and Mike is like getting the best jokes. But this movie, like, they're all talking over on top of each other like brothers would do. Like, they're all fighting for attention. And it's also the most distinctive physical appearances the turtles have been given. Like, their colors are slightly different. They're not shaped the same. Donnie is clearly smaller than the other three. They borrow from the Michael Bay turtles, where they went real hard on the accessories in the Michael Bay movies, where like Donnie's clearly the tech guy because he's got, you know, night vision goggles on. Like, it was a lot. This one's not nearly as extreme, but like Donnie's got headphones on, and he's clearly more comfortable with technology, but they all have cell phones. Like, it's, you know, like it's just this really great understanding of who these characters are individually, but also as a unit. And I don't know that we've gotten such a good unit build in the other movies. And again, that wasn't my observation, but I really agreed when it was said. Just such a fun movie. I really want to, I've been meaning to see it a second time. I hesitate to go to an animated film alone because I don't want to freak out families that are there to see it, because it's not for me, it's for them.
I was right there by myself, JB, it's fine.
I know, and I've obviously gone to animated films alone, but I haven't gone yet. I am going to see it at least one more time in theaters, though, before it leaves, and I will 100% be adding this to my film collection because I adore this movie.
Yeah, 100%, JP. There's a very Mitchells versus Machine kind of chaotic animation to this as well, but I enjoy that film. It's interesting you mentioned the colours, though, because whilst I don't disagree with you, when I was watching it, in certain moments, I was like, they've nailed the colours here. And I mean, literally, like the bandana colours.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, they've got those tones of purple, blue, orange, and red. That feels like the animated series. That feels like the old film. That feels right. And even kind of the colourings of the turtles themselves, they've always had slightly different shades of green. I was like, no, they get it. And it took me back. There's a few shots, specifically kind of the kind of hero shots of them.
The homage.
And I'm like, damn. And the, yeah. And I was like, damn, this is it. Yeah, I mean, listen, the story and the script is what it is. It is, like I say, it's geared to more.
It's mostly good.
It's decent, yeah. It's geared towards a younger audience. So don't go in expecting a lot of weight and a lot of kind of thematic damage. This is not bad. This is a fun film which knows what it is, and that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, you know what I mean? There are some plotting things, and there's some. I think we see a little influence of the DC and Marvel style of structure for comic book movies.
Yeah,
but the tone is its own. This is its own tone. The very first fight scene in this film is one of the funniest things I've seen on screen in a couple of years. Like, I was cracking up watching it, having a total blast. It works.
And it leads to that progression as well, but even the progression doesn't feel like OP or silly. You don't see these guys go from kind of zeros to OP superheroes in the space of a film. It isn't that kind of film, which I really enjoyed as well. But by the end, it is a very satisfying payoff. The music, by the way, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, the music in this is fantastic. And the soundtrack, which is East Coast hip hop, because obviously their turtles are all about New York and paying homage. And the film as well is, again, another loving nod to New York. But you've got a lot of East Coast sound in here. You've got Bella Soul, you've got Blackstreet, ODB, Lauryn Hill, Busta Rhymes, DMX. So many, and of course there is a nod to Secrets of the Ooze, which had me bawling in joy. And if you we're talking soundtrack, we're talking Turtles 2, I think you guys know what song we're on about, but just in case, spoiler warning for the spoiler show. But you know, I enjoyed it, JB, an awful lot. I had a great time with it. My little one enjoyed it as well. It was a blast. It's what I wanted, John. I wanted a film to be it's easy going. Obviously there are still stakes throughout, but it's easy going. It was a film which I could enjoy second time round. I don't feel like I'd missed much the first time, so I could enjoy it more the second time. Guys, if you don't know what the word Riz means, Google it. You're going to need to. And there are a few pop culture nods in there, which I didn't mind. One or two were a bit in your face, but otherwise, yeah, really, really good time, JB. Cannot really find many faults with this. It delivered what I would want from a Turtles film, and I think it sounds like you're on the same wavelength.
Yes, sir.
Well, there we go. Like I say, in a few days' time, we'll come back with a much shorter show, but we'll be going into much more spoilers in that show. So if you want to hear what we think about the spoilery parts of the film, come check out the spoiler episode. But now we're going to move on to our next segment, which we call Chuffed Headlines.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John and myself, we take a movie or pop culture news headline that caught our attention for whatever reason this week, and we share it with each other and with all of you too. So JB, what have you gone for this week?
So I picked a headline that I am proud to be on the right side of, is Elemental, and Pixar have quietly made a box office comeback. Elemental did not do well opening weekend. I was a huge fan of it. I really, really enjoyed the movie. I wrote a pretty good review over at BerkReviews.com for it. We didn't cover it on the podcast because you haven't seen it yet, but I can't remember what we did instead. It came out with Against Something. I love Pixar. There's not very many Pixar films that I won't champion. And even Lightyear, which no one has come around on, but I was an advocate for Lightyear last year. But I really liked Elemental a lot. I saw this twice. I took my yearbook kids to this even. My three editors that were at a workshop. It was not doing well. Although the when I took them, it was a packed house. And I was like, oh, maybe people are seeing this. And it hasn't got a lot of, like, hype. It didn't have like a big weekend, but apparently it's been quietly winning over audiences. To be fair, a lot of its competition has not done well. Like Spider-Verse is animated, but it's really not for a younger audience. And Turtles is for a younger audience, but maybe it will get more box office towards the end, but it's not, mm-hmm. it didn't come bursting out like I was hoping Turtles would, but Elemental quietly been making money, not just in the States, but worldwide. It's made over $400 million worldwide, wow. 148 in North America, which is really good, because if you hadn't been paying attention pretty much since COVID, Disney has not been releasing Pixar films to theaters, just on Disney Plus, with the exception being Lightyear, which then bombed. And now Elemental comes out and it doesn't look like it's going to do well. And it's like, oh no, is Pixar going to be relegated to a streaming animated studio? And that it. But it looks like we are at least crisis averted for now. Elemental has made enough box office. I think Disney will put the next Pixar film on the big screen where they belong. But, you know, I don't mind getting them on Disney Plus, but I definitely prefer seeing movies on the big screen when I can. And I'm glad that it's come back. And Matt still has not seen Elemental. Mm-hmm. What up with that?
I apologize. I am a victim to what JB has since told me I am wrong for. And I dig it. In that I saw the trailer and I thought, yeah, he looks okay. But, you know, I wasn't a big fan of Luca, and some of the more recent Pixar films have been hit or miss. Really liked Soul, but been a little bit of hit and miss. So I saw the trailer and I kind of thought, maybe I'll wait for this to come to Disney Plus. But JP said, the trailer does not sell this film as well as it should do. It's actually, I say actually, as if it's a surprise, but it's a decent film, very good film. Go check it out. And when I came out of Mutant Mayhem with my kid the other day, she saw the marketing, the cardboard cutouts for Elemental, and mentioned that somebody at her school had seen it. I think was kind of like twigging the idea of going to see it herself. So if she doesn't go with her mum, then I'll take her to see it, and I'll add to that box office, JB. But no, I'm glad to hear this, because it was being used as another stick to beat Disney, Pixar, streaming services with, or whatever you want to call it, the go broke crap. And to be honest, though, I am surprised at the legs it's had. Speaking from somebody who hasn't seen the film, speaking as somebody, though, who has seen so many films since this Elemental came out, such is the congestion at the box office. There are so many films coming out. I would have assumed that with Elemental's slow start, it's had its time. What is it? People say if you don't make your money in the first 2 weeks, you're not making any, other than your Titanics and stuff. That's generally kind of a rule of thumb. But Elemental, you know, quietly reaching the 400 million mark and rising ever so slowly is a good indication also that people are going back to the cinema, and that, yeah, we've got huge films like Barbie, Oppenheimer, and now Turtles and all these other ones. But, you know, an animated film, which you would assume was geared more towards kids, has outstayed its welcome almost. It's still being shown at theatres. Why? Because there is a demand for it. And I kind of hope that one day this translates against streaming. And I do enjoy streaming service, but, you know, when you can, somebody like me, for example, can say, when I don't often do this, but I can say, oh, you know, I'll wait for that to come out in streaming, you know, because they come out so soon. You have films which are on the big screen, and then within 3 to 4 weeks are on a streaming service. Mm-hmm. That's terrible. I really don't like it. So maybe this can, it won't, but maybe it will have the heads at Disney. Maybe they can get their heads out of wherever they are, but have them see that, you know, maybe we should hold fire with pushing everything to streaming, because if you've got a product and it's good and word of mouth spreads, then, you know, you can make more on something which maybe you didn't expect to do quite so well, certainly from the forecast and original estimates. So I'm pleased to hear this one, JB.
Yep, it's a positive headline for a change. So on the other hand, what's your headline?
Yeah, mine isn't, frankly, but it was only
able to be some positivity.
There is some positivity, but the headline itself, it rolls off the news that on Monday, the 7th of August, the director of The Exorcist, A French Connection, Sorcerer to Live and Die in LA, William Friedkin, passed away from heart failure and pneumonia at the age of 87 at his Los Angeles home. His wife, Sherry, broke the news, and He's one of my favorite directors, if not mine. I love his style of filmmaking, even if the films themselves aren't always the best, which I've always said. You know, you've only got to look at something like Jade in the mid-90s, which isn't a great film. But there is always that sensibility. So there's always an honesty to his films. There's a real cinema verite feel. There's a real grounded, gritty approach to it. And in later career, so you've got some great films like Bug, Killing Joe, and there is still the Caine Mutiny of Billy Friedkin, which is having its premiere next month at the Venice Film Festival. It's such a shame that the man himself couldn't be around to see that. But I love Billy Friedkin. I love his outspoken way, his raconteur style, his interviews I could watch for hours. Sadly, passed away on Monday. It really kicked me in the gut when I heard it. Really did. Because I've noticed in recent months that he was looking a little bit old, if I can be so bold. He wasn't looking great, but he's 87 years old. But to see the news and to see it coming out on the trades, it didn't feel good. I didn't like reading it, but because, you know, when it's somebody you admire, you don't want to hear that they've gone. So I was very sad to hear this. Very sad on Monday. Really, really was actually on Monday. But it's been great to see the tributes pouring in, JB, which is the headline here by Clark Collis of Entertainment Weekly. And the headline is Exorcist star Linda Blair pays tribute to director, friend and protector William Friedkin. Blair calls the late filmmaker a genius. Of course, Linda Blair was Regan McNeil in the 1973 Exorcist as a 12-year-old girl who, spoiler, gets possessed. But she took to Instagram to deliver a really, really kind of open and kind and loving eulogy to Billy Friedkin, you know, talking about what a game changer he was, what a bold personality he was, and how he protected her, took her under his wing on set. You hear the stories of Billy Friedkin that he's brash, he's, you know, he's like a bull in a china shop. But everybody who's come out, like Guillermo del Toro and everybody else, saying that was a front for the man himself, which was really a kind, loving man. And Linda Blair's statement only backs that up. Ellen Burstyn, who of course starred in The Exorcist 2, came out and said he was an original, smart, cultured, fearless and wildly talented, and was undoubtedly a genius. And of course, she's starring in David Gordon Green's Exorcist Believer, which you can't help but kind of think now that film has that bit more resting on its shoulders now, because Billy Friedkin wasn't a fan of the idea of it anyway. But now, if it isn't great, you know, people will come out and say awful things about how it's tarnished the legacy and everything else. But Billy Friedkin getting tributes from filmmakers, film stars, young and old, for his influence on them. And outside of that as well, like things like, I say, To Live and Die, Cruising, not The Guardian, that's not very good, are great films in a very, very eclectic filmography. And for me, JB, I was very heartened to see these kind words coming out, and also the really fun clips of his interviews over the years, especially the ones about Al Pacino. But I was very saddened by the news that Brilliant Freaking passed away this week. But you saw the headline, obviously you heard the news. What were your thoughts on, obviously, on the news, but the legacy, I guess?
I mean, I haven't seen some of his other films. Like, I haven't seen The Sorcerer, and I want to, but it's like, you have to shell out some money for that. I haven't seen Killer Joe even, which is high on my list of things to watch. Some I didn't realize were Friedkin, like Blue Chips. Like, yep. I loved Blue Chips as a kid because I was, Shaquille O'Neal played in Orlando. Like that, yeah. So I was a huge Shaq fan. That movie, man, I watched it so many times. And Rules of Engagement, like I didn't realize it was a freaking film. But then, like, I recently, within the last couple of years, watched French Connection and To Live and Die in L.A. I saw The Exorcist as a kid, far too young. I hate seeing on his letterbox my birthday for his day of death. I obviously, you know, iconic filmmaker. I had not studied him the same way that you have. But I have seen a lot of stuff in the last couple of days, and it's, you know, I will say, I hope I can live to 84. I'd love to live longer, but like, that is a good life. So I would have loved for him to stick around. And I know people were talking about him making another, like, he has a movie coming out, as you said, but like, even like, what's the next movie? And it is a shame this will be the end.
Yeah, so it's sad news. So obviously, rest in peace, rest in power, William Friedkin. But the legacy, as we always say, the legacy will always live on, and it will probably outlive most of, if not all of us. So sad news to end off with there, but there's always a positive. As we say, the legacy will be there. But let's move on then, JB, to what we've been checking out in the last week since our last episode, in our section called Media Consumption, which is where we talk about the movies, TV shows, video games, music, podcasts, which aren't ours, anything that we've used to pass the time since the last show. JB, what have you been checking out this week?
Well, Blank Check is still covering Park Chan-wook, and I caught, actually watched I Am a Cyborg a few weeks ago, but I haven't mentioned it because we've been talking Fantasia and stuff, and we had the double Barbenheimer episode. I Am a Cyborg was not easy to see here in the States, but I did manage to finally get to see it. It was never released theatrically here, so it doesn't even have like box office information for the US, but really quirky movie, not like some of Park's other stuff, but I liked it. A good episode of the podcast as well. I've been listening to Film Spotting again, not consistently, but they are doing African film study, like, or African film marathon, they call it, but they don't like marathon it, but they're like, here's five movies that we're going to talk about kind of at the end of episodes, and looking at African films. And I've seen some African films, but I definitely have a lot to study in world cinema in general, but that's a continent that I have not seen a lot of what their pinnacle films are. So I'm watching through them, and I caught Black Girl from, I think, 1966. I didn't know what to expect going in. It's a really good movie, but it is not an easy subject matter at all. But really, really well made. Black and white film, looks fantastic. Has a lot of French influence because it is set in France, even though it is an African film. It deals with that cultural, like, back and forth between Africa and France.
There's always been a huge influx of Africans to France. It's always been that way. So there's always a kind of synergy between the nations and areas.
I caught Park's next film that they're going to be talking about on the podcast this week is Thirst, which has, I got to learn the dude's name, but from Parasite, I mean, he's one of my favorite actors. He's worked with both Bong Joon-ho and Park Chan-wook a lot. I will one day remember.
Bong Joon-ho?
Yes. One of my favorite actors, I think, in general, and I can't, Song Kang-ho. I have to be better at remembering his name. I just always like, oh, it's him! And I know I'm going to love everything he does because he is such a phenomenal talent. The range that dude can deliver in one movie. Because he can have you cracking up and then devastatingly crying a few minutes later. He is incredible. Thirst is a really interesting take on a vampire story. I liked it. It's weird. It's weird in the way that Park is weird. So, Caught the Meg 2, I will keep my opinions to myself because we will be talking about that one very soon.
Yep.
A film I missed in theaters because it didn't come near me and I didn't have the chance to go see it was Polite Society.
Yes, I saw that.
I wanted to see it in theaters. I didn't. I watched it on Peacock. I also, to be completely fair to it, I did not give it 100% of my attention because I am trying to like juggle a bunch of stuff. But I've been meaning to watch it. I did like it. I didn't love it. And I really wanted to love it because the trailer like really had me. And I only kind of got hooked into it. I do think there's some really great moments in the film, but like as a collective piece, I just thought it was okay, but worth checking out. Yeah. Peacock.
I thought it fell apart a little bit towards the end. It got a little bit stupid. But I enjoyed it for the most part. I think I really wanted to like it more than I did, but I think I gave it a happy 7, maybe 7.5 out of 10, or I think I gave it.
Yeah, it almost feels more like a series, like, because it's very episodic almost. There are moments where, like, well, this could have been last week's episode. Now we're on this next episode. But overall, again, good performances and there's good stuff in it. I just wish it had landed a little stronger for me. Yes. And then I have watched all the Hayao Miyazaki films, but I have not seen all of the Studio Ghibli films, which for a little while, I think I had a misconception that Studio Ghibli and Hayao Miyazaki were one and the same. And obviously he is the founder of, and like some of the best movies from Studio Ghibli are his.
Yes.
But there's other good ones out there and I just have not seen them. And I finally caught The Secret World of Arrietty, and I really enjoyed that movie. I'm glad I finally got to it because I liked it. I don't know if you've seen that one or not.
I have not. No, I'm also going through all the Ghibli films. It was very much kind of a dead spot on my list where I wanted to watch them but never got round to it. I was also kind of intimidated by the fact there's quite a few of them. If you want to watch, go from A to Z, it's quite a few. So damn,
I do recommend. Definitely recommend the Blank Check episodes.
Okay.
Well, yes, but also the Blank Check. They covered all of Hayao's films. They didn't do all of Studio Ghibli. They did all of Hayao Miyazaki's films, and the episodes are great.
Maybe I will do then, because I was like, what do I do? Do I go in with the big hitters first? Your Spirited Away, Totoro, Mononoke, or do I just go from the beginning and watch the evolution? So I decided not to do anything to start with, and now I'm basically kind of dipping my toe in here and there.
Wait, you've never seen Spirited Away?
I have. No, I have.
Oh, okay.
This is what I meant. I was like, when I started, I was like, do I watch Spirited Away first and then go back and watch everything else, or do I start with the very first one and go forward? So basically what I've done is I've watched the major films, you know, the ones everyone's heard of, Spirited Away, My Neighbor Totoro, Howl's Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke, all of those kind of things, Naruto. So and then kind of filling in, like you're doing here by the sounds of it, filling in the ones which I haven't seen.
Porco Rosso so much. That one was my biggest curveball. I did not expect to love that one as much as I did.
I want to see that, man. It's a
Michael Keaton, man. That's the big debate always with anime is, do you watch subbed or dubbed? The Ghibli films, you're often safe going with a dub because they get incredible voice casts. Like in Totoro, it's the
Fanning sisters.
The Fanning sisters. Yeah, I couldn't pull the last name for some reason. I was like, L? It's not L. What's
Ellen Dakota, yes.
Dakota and L, but I couldn't pull Fanning. Just such good voice cast in all of them. I forgot who was in Arrietty, but it was like voices that I also really like. And I was like, oh, I didn't know they did this. Definitely worth checking out all of those films. They're really good. And then lastly, video games. I've been playing Dead Space on PS5. I don't know why I put 2. It's not Dead Space 2. It's just Dead Space. Really, I don't always love survival horror because it's not the fear, it's the anxiety that gets me. Cause like, I want games to be a release from anxiety and like games like that where you're like fighting over resources and limited bullets. But there's something about the setting. It very much feels like you're in the world of Alien in a lot of ways, which is really cool. Really enjoying it. I still get stressed out and I haven't played for a couple days because it was just, I'm like, I'm at a point where it's really hard. But at some point I'll get back to it. But really cool game, enjoying it a lot.
No, I hear you, my friend. I played Alien Isolation for all of about 20 minutes and it scared the living hell out of me.
Yep.
So I couldn't go back to play. It honestly was so like suffocatingly scary.
I'm playing Dead Space on easy and I definitely have not had an issue with ammo compared to other games it's a little easier, but still times where like you're not expecting a bad guy and then there's suddenly a bad guy and you're just like but the atmosphere is really cool. The story is very compelling. Definitely worth checking out.
Nice. I have been actually meaning to play Dead Space for a while, so if it's been recommended, then I'm all over that. But my one, JB, I have been listening to the Nightmare on Film Street podcast. They've been looking at oddly enough, Face Off last week. I think I mentioned that.
Just Cage films, huh?
Just Cage. Oh, and Con Air this week. I mean, let's face it, two wonderful films from the kind of mid to late 90s, and I'll have nobody tell me that they're not. So it's fun to kind of have a bit of a left field swing and listen to films that aren't horror for once. But I enjoyed that, listening to the Watching Double Toasted tutorial on YouTube as well. For films, JB, I Fantasia's been and gone now. I've watched a ton of films, far too many. And I won't go through all of them because some of them I didn't think were very good at all. One of them, I actually agree with Tuna for once, and that's Perpetrator. I didn't like that film. Some of the best films I saw at Fantasia post our episode last week, I saw Birth/Rebirth. I thought that was wildly good. I thought that was like fantastically good horror film.
And that one should be on Shudder, I think, soon.
Yes, you're right. That one's getting a release on Shudder. If you can check that one out, please do. It's some heavy stuff. And the final shot of that is wow. Sometimes I Think About Dying, the Rachel Lambert film. I really enjoy that. That film's a little bit of me in the sense that it feels like a kind of boring slice of life, a bit like Patterson-esque, where it just follows somebody in a mundane life. But it spoke to me, like the relatability of the character spoke to me. Watch the film when it comes out. It's getting released at some point soon. And then I saw a film called New Life. I thought that was a really cool thriller horror mashup, which surprised me because I thought it was going to be a little bit bland when I watched it. And then I saw some other films which were a little bit more middling, but they're all on whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. But thank you, Fantasia. You've been great. We are done with you now until maybe next year. We'll see. So I watched that. I also went back and rewatched Sorcerer. With the news, obviously, of Billy Friedkin's passing, it would have been easy to watch The Exorcist. And I did actually record Star Wars Sessions, the sister show, with my Exorcist t-shirt on in tribute. But I thought, well, I know that film back to back. It's the greatest film of all time. No comebacks. And I love The French Connection. Fantastic film. I was like, you know what? I fancy Sorcerer. Because Sorcerer, it should, now it's getting the acclaim, and this is before Friedkin's passing, but in the last decade or so, maybe decade and a half, maybe even two, it's getting reevaluated, and actually this is a cinematic gem which went under the radar because it had the misfortune of coming out at the same time as Star Wars in 1977, and it had no chance. It got wiped away, swept away, and there was also a bit of press angst towards Friedkin at the time, which didn't help. But Sorcerer is a magnificent film. A lot of people say it is his magnum opus. It's such a good film. It's such a tense film, compelling film. It is muscle clenching in all the wrong places, my friend, at points. It's the way it's shot, the way it's captured, the use of diegetics, not sound, you don't need music here. Honestly, fantastic film. And rewatching it, obviously, in the wake of Billy Friedkin's passing, had a sort of touch, a bittersweet touch to it, but goddamn, is that a hell of a film, Sorcerer. And I think it's available for a decent price. I mean, I got it on Blu-ray a couple of years ago for about 12 quid, 15 bucks, so it's not too bad. But again, obviously, that might be a lot of money to a lot of people, and I respect it. So, and oddly enough, though, JB, I remember sending you a picture, I think it's last week, because I was on my lunch break, last Thursday or Friday. I started listening to an audiobook by Nat Segeloff called The Exorcist Legacy, 50 Years of Fear, which I thought was a really odd coincidence. I'm going to start reading that at the end of last week, and then we get the news on Monday about Friedkin. And I finished it on Monday or Tuesday. But it's also a hardback or paperback, but I wanted to listen to it. I find myself erring more towards audiobooks now. I've had a right about turn in the last 6 months. But it obviously is about the Exorcist film from 73, but wonderfully, it also spends a good half of the book, maybe, on the Exorcist II, the Heretic, on the Exorcist III, and on Dominion and the Beginning, the prequels, and a little bit on the new trilogy that's coming out. And so it isn't just about the original. Obviously, that takes up a lion's share of it. But they talk about the legacy of that film going forward, and they really dive into the second film a lot, which I enjoyed. I don't like the film, but I loved hearing about what went on and John Borman and everybody's thoughts on it, which I hadn't heard previously. So that was really, really, really cool audiobook again. Odd timing, but it's just the way the cookie crumbles, I guess. But yeah, if you're a fan of the film or just filmmaking or Friedkin, I would pick that up. Because it's an awful lot of fun, JB. So, one film this week, because I was going to go and watch The Meg 2, The Trench, but I got home from work on Tuesday and I thought, this bed's far too comfy to move from. Sorry, Statham, you're going to have to wait until Thursday. Mm-hmm. So I will have seen it by next week, John. Fear not.
No worries. Of course, I will. I didn't say if I like it or not, so we're going to wait until next week to hear.
Yes, and I think this time I'm not going to tell John what I think about it. Sometimes you have to, but I might keep him in suspense. But I haven't even seen the film, so maybe I'll come out and not be able to control myself. But that would be a bloody awesome effort, some might say. And guess what, JB? Each week we have to stay bloody awesome in order to bring this show to each and every one of you. We have to make sure that bloody awesome levels are topped up. So, JB, how have you been staying bloody awesome this week?
Well, it was orientation this week for my job, meaning the new students and a lot of my returning students, although mostly for orientation, it's just going to be the new students who are coming to the school for the first time. Mm-hmm. I get to meet them. I get to talk to their parents. They get to decide if they are excited or worried about my class. And it was just last night, and it went rather well. It was, the students are why I continue to do this job. It's definitely not the money, and it's definitely not all the bureaucratic nightmare of mm-hmm. teaching, but students and being able to make them feel confident in themselves and excited to come and learn is what I'm all about. And it was a really good experience last night. We had a lot of people show up for orientation, which we weren't sure about because we did it a little earlier than we normally do. And early is not always easier for parents to get there. And we had a great turnout, so it was really cool.
Nice.
Day after my birthday on top of that, which I guess I could have had, I had a birthday, but really of the highlights. And it's kind of like for years, my birthday was in the summer, so I didn't work during my birthday. And the last couple of years, we've started school a little earlier. And so I'm back at work during my birthday, which has afforded me something I did even as a kid. I was in summer break when my birthday would happen. People I wouldn't see normally are now seeing me on my birthday. And I have to say, people have been so gracious and so cool about it. And for years of not having, like, being around a lot of people unless they came to a celebration for me, it's fun walking into a place and them, like, making it known that it's your birthday or surprising you with something that they weren't. Like, tomorrow, we're actually, one of my coworkers has insisted that we're having cheesecake tomorrow in celebration of my birthday, with a whole group. And it's, I'm so grateful. I have no expectations of something like that. And, it's really hard for me to accept it. Cause I feel like you're making such an effort for me and I don't need that, but I am very grateful for it. And I don't always feel like I'm expressing that enough, but, I'm very, and again, this is all part of the orientation week, being back at work, being with my coworkers. It happened to be my birthday, and just the, there's a lot to be concerned with in our profession right now, but I feel like the teachers at my school are really rallying together, and it feels more connected than it has since COVID, and it's been really nice to have that. So
nice. And cheesecake, John. Cheesecake.
And cheesecake. I will send you a picture, as I always do, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm very much looking forward to it. I like cheesecake a whole lot. So, so much so that another coworker who went with me to our yearbook workshop, we made sure to stop at the Cheesecake Factory when we were at this one mall. I had tiramisu cheesecake, and
you son of a gun.
Yeah, but Matt, how are you saying bloody awesome?
Oh, not eating cheesecake. I am my man. It's I'm freeing up some sweet time is what I'm doing, John. And it comes off the back of watching so many films and doing so many write-ups in the last 2 weeks, which I'm eternally grateful for, as always. But I posted my final review onto my site, I think it's this morning because it's the last day today. And I pressed publish and I thought, literally, it's like a sigh of relief. It was like, firstly, you know, great, we've done it, awesome. Secondly, I was like, do you know what, I can enjoy, I know that's the wrong thing to say, I can appreciate now that the next few weeks and months, my evenings are going to be freer. My kind of schedule and brain load is going to be a little bit lighter. I don't have that, like you say, that when you sign up for something and you actively put yourself out to do it and you're asking for things, you then have to follow that up. You have an obligation. That's gone now, and I'm quite excited. It sounds really odd, but...
I get it.
And the idea now, which I can go and see the Meg 2, hopefully it's great, on Thursday. But then on Friday, I don't have to think, oh, well, I better not watch A Sorcerer, you know, kind of film, or I best not watch Megan or something, because I've got to watch 2-3 films tonight. It's quite nice to think, right, that was a pretty chaotic spell. Now it's back to normality, back to just checking out what's coming at my own pace. And you know what? I'm quite excited about that. And that isn't to say what a bad experience watching free films and writing about them. It's wonderful. But it is nice to also be able to just chill out and watch the things I want to watch now for the next few months or the next year or whenever until our next festival. So my man, I'm looking forward to doing what I did yesterday, coming home from work, putting my feet up, and not doing anything because that's what I like doing most of the time. I should, though, go to the gym a bit more often. But yeah, me, JB, freeing up some time after a busy, I know you've had the same, a busy few weeks.
Yeah, I free time is essential for decompressing, and I have not had a whole lot lately. So I am, I frankly don't see a lot coming up, but I'm, doing my thing. I'm trying to get to that point where I can not feel the pressure of everything. But
thank God for the BAMP then as an outlet to at least, if you're going to rock films, we can at least talk about them on here if we're not going to do it anywhere else. So that is what the BAMP is all about. We're here for you guys, but we're now leaving. Thanks. But we are going to be back again next week, as we've mentioned, with our review of Meg 2, The Trench, the new Jason Statham shark film. So we're going to have a non-spoiler and spoiler review coming out for that. And we hope you enjoyed this episode and our Turtles chat. If you did, let us know. Find us on Twitter/X at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast. JB, where are we on Instagram?
Instagram and Threads as Bloody Awesome Movie Pod.
It's too many now. On Facebook/Meta, we're on at Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. Keep your eyes on the Tomato Meter because we post our reviews on there because we are Tomato Meter approved because we're that damn good. If you want to talk to us individually, you can find me, whatiwatchtonight.co.uk, and all of the socials. There's too many to list to search What I Watch Tonight, and including Letterboxd as well. JB, where are you?
I'm at BurkeReviews.com and at BurkeReviews on all the social media platforms.
Yep, go check JB out. And if you enjoy what we do here, and we hope that you do, we've been doing it for so long now and we love it, please do consider giving us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast provider of choice, because it gets more listeners in, it gets us up the listener lists, and we get to hear from more film fans each and every week. But with that, as always, stay bloody awesome.
And keep watching movies.
Blood, 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 bloody. Blood, 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 bloody, blood, 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 bloody, blood, 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 bloody, blood, blood, bloody.